This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi, this is Paul Lathrop from the Politics and Guns Podcast. You're listening to Bob Main on the Handgun World Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Bob Main, and you're listening to another episode of the weekly Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. I think this is episode number 253. I am driving in the Handgun World mobile studio, so I'm gonna pay attention to the road and not whip out my iPhone and try to figure out what episode this is. But that's kind of trivial stuff. This is going to be mainly about competition shooting. And I brought John Hottaway on the show to talk about it. I have a special announcement I'd like to make before we get to that. There will not be a show next week. I am going to have an incredibly busy week of training with my real job. And I am just simply not going to have the opportunity to record a podcast. I just probably am not even going to get a chance. You know, most of you don't know, it takes quite a few hours of work to actually do a little bit of research, which I like to do almost every week, put it all together, edit it, post it, and do all that. And I'm going to be involved in some pretty exhausting and tiring training. So I've got a pretty good record about getting a show out every week. Give me a break and let me have 1 week off, and I will be back next week for, well, not next week, but the week after that for sure. So there'll only be a 2 week gap between my episodes that I put out, okay? Anyway, thank you for your understanding on that. So competition shooting, this is kind of a mixed bag of topics, but I asked John Hottaway to come on. I really didn't even have a topic in mind for him. I let him pick it, and he wanted to talk about IDPA Nationals, and he wanted to talk about competition shooting in general. We do spend a little bit of time talking about good qualities of an instructor, because we touched on this probably 6 or 7 months ago when I had him on the show. But we never really got to finish it. So this is kind of a part two on the qualities of a good instructor. But the majority of our talk is about competition shooting. I have a couple comments, though, that I'd like to mention before the main topic. This is about the main topic. How many of you listening to this participate in competition? My next question is, how many of you that participate in competition shooting get criticized for it? And then I want you to answer this question. How many of you who participate in competition and get criticized, how many of you hear this? Oh, well, competition is no good because it'll teach you habits that can get you killed. All right, well, we will address that at the end of this interview with a call to action. And if some of you have some material for the call to action that John and I do at the end of this interview, I would love to hear it. And please follow the methods that we use. That all being said, here we go. John Hottaway on competition shooting and the IDPA Nationals. John Hottaway is back on the show for kind of a mixed bag of discussion. John, welcome back.
Hey, thank you for having me back.
Yeah, so you've got kind of a mixed bag of stuff you want to talk about. Just to let people know, what I did is I emailed John and I said, you know, I want to do an interview and I don't really have a topic in mind, but I'll bet you that you've got one or several, and that's the way it turned out to be.
And you know what, Bob, what I've got to say is that's why everyone needs a spam filter, because if not, you get your emails and then I'm on your show.
Yeah, that's right.
But thanks for having me. It's been a while, and I've got to say I really enjoy doing your show, because, you know, I feel like we kind of get to thrash things out, and it's usually not the same old rehash. It usually allows us to actually it helps me to kind of vent and talk about some of the things that are on my mind. And so hopefully we'll have a couple of good things to talk about today.
Yeah, and I like the fact that we're not going to rehash stuff. I've had a couple of comments, just kind of minor comments, that they think that my show is somewhat repetitive. I try not to repeat the same old stuff again, so we won't do that on this episode.
Okay, no problem.
Although, I will throw in one little caveat. Repetition is the mother of learning, but I digress. We'll move on.
Boy, that was sort of a passive-aggressive little comment there to your listeners, wasn't it?
It was a passive—yes, it was. But anyway, to learn anything, you know what? You got to repeat it over and over and over again. But I understand, so we're going to cover some new stuff.
Okay, good.
All right, first of all, you kind of want to talk about IDPA and training, training for competition, and also IDPA nationals and things, don't you?
Sure. You know, Bob, I've been giving a lot of thought to something, and the thought kind of runs this way. You know, there are things that are easy to get people to do with a gun, and there are hard things to get people to do with a gun. And what I come down to, I heard this at IDPA Nationals, and it really stuck with me. It said, you know, there's a bunch of people that their goal with their gun is to convert money into noise. And I thought about that for a minute, and I thought, you know, what are we really saying here when we say, I'm going to go out and convert money into noise? Well, what that really means is, you know, I'm spending my money, I'm spending my time. And, you know, after all, time is kind of the finite resource. We can get more ammunition, we can get more guns, we can get more money, we can get more stuff, but we don't get more time. So when we've got the time, we're willing to take our guns and we go out and we convert money into noise. And, you know, if I think we're honest with ourselves and we're saying, you know, that's all I'm doing. It's a stress-relieving activity, and I could be out here hitting golf balls, but instead I'm just going to come out here and I'm going to plink and I'm going to casually shoot. That's fine. I'm really good with that. Yeah. I'm not criticizing it. I think it's a great, fun thing. And there are times I just enjoy doing that. I mean, I may do it with a machine gun instead of a 10-22, but, you know, I understand. There's something cathartic to me about having the bullet hose running there.
But
let's not fool ourselves. Let's not fool ourselves and say, that is making me a better shooter. That is helping me to be prepared for competition or self-defense, or if the balloon goes up, or if we have to all unfold our tinfoil hats and put them on and protect ourselves from the black helicopters, whatever that is. You know, that is not making us better. That's making our guns go bang. And, you know, I said, well, why is it that we do that? Why is it that we'll fool ourselves into doing that? And I thought, you know, I think if – I remember one time Mass actually wrote the Ayub files in a story out of the Bible. And I thought, you know, that was pretty interesting. And, you know, not particularly a religious man, but, you know, he wrote that. And I thought, I wonder if there's an example of that. And then I actually came across this, Bob, was, you know, when you look at right – in the the passion play, basically, you know, they've got this moment where Jesus calls his disciples over and he says, "Hey, stay awake and pray with me for a little bit." And he comes back and they're all asleep. Mm-hmm. And then when they come to get Jesus, what does Peter do? He pulls out his little, you know, sword there, his you know, ceremonial sword, and he lops off Caiaphas's ear. And, you know, I think about that and I thought, wow, you know, it's a whole lot easier to get people excited about one thing and rather than the other. And it's kind of like that with shooting. You know, we all want to be great shots. We all want to go out and make that shot on demand in front of our friends who are out there, you know, plinking and shooting and watch this and do this and can you hit this and what if we did this and whatever. We all want to do that.
Right, yeah, we do.
But we don't want to put in the work to get there. We would rather be lucky than good. Well, unfortunately, luck tends to favor the prepared person.
Well, that's true.
The harder I work, the luckier I get.
Yeah, most people create a large portion of their own luck.
And so what I'm going to submit here is that when we talk about what we're doing with guns, when we talk about the things that are going on, it's easy to get people to go buy guns. It's easy to get people to go to Cabela's with you to the gun store. It's easy to, you know, get online and rant on a forum, and it's easy to even listen to this podcast. Well, maybe not completely pleasant, but it's easy to listen to me talk on the podcast. What's hard is to get people to say, hey, meet me at the range, let's practice. Meet me at the range, let's go with a purpose. Well, I think that is what, as gun owners, we're lacking. We're lacking that desire to put somebody on the spot and say, hey, you want to go practice? And I mean practice, here's what we're going to go work on. What do you need to work on while we're there? And I think that's what we've got to hold ourselves to, that higher standard, because if not, we're not going to get better, and we're really just kind of fooling ourselves. Now, I'm okay if that's what we want to call it. You know, we're going to go plink, but let's don't call it practice if we don't actually go out with a plan. Let's don't call it practice if we don't measure our results. And let's don't call it practice if we don't have something that's a goal that we have of going out there. I'm not saying that going out just to shoot and enjoy ourselves is not an end unto itself, but let's acknowledge that's at least what we're doing. And I think that's what we got to call ourselves to do.
I can agree on that. I think we're on the same page there.
And, you know, with that said, there's an interesting article that I read, and I will actually attribute who it was to, was Grant Cunningham had put it up on his blog. And Grant, let's call it the way it is. I think Grant's, from what I know, I've never met Grant, is a world-class revolver smith. I think he is a practitioner of the revolver, all things revolver, and have heard universally nothing but great praise for his gunsmithing ability. I've never seen the man shoot, never seen him instruct, but everyone I know that knows him says what a great revolver smith he is. He was at the ICE, which is the Rob Pincus school, on their instructor development out in the People's Republic of California. And he came back and he wrote this article. And what he basically started out with, his premise was, is he had a picture of a man. He said, "Who is this?" And he came back and he basically said this was a gymnastics coach who was pretty much famous for tons and tons of gold medals. And I won't spoil it. I'll let you read it. But his point was, is you don't have to be good at something to be a good coach. And, you know, I got to say, I agree with the man's point to a point. But I want to point out that this was also an Olympic boxer, this gentleman was.
Okay.
And, you know, Bob, as a rule, I say, you know, there's a lot of things in life I don't have to experience to have an opinion on, okay? And to have an informed opinion on, I don't have to experience. But to teach, I have to have something relevant that can move over. Now, let me give you a couple of examples. If I say, for instance, am a master class shooter in one discipline, I may be able to help someone move up in another discipline, so IDPA to USPSA, or I may be able to help someone in three gun. What I don't think, though, is how do I teach someone, for instance, how do I teach someone what a perfect, precise trigger pull is if I can't demonstrate that on demand?
No, I 100% agree with that. I mean, okay. You've got to be able to shoot in front of your students and do a good job of it.
Yeah, and the second thing is this. You know, there's another little thing that we leave out. I don't know. I've done some research, and let me just share with you this. I have never known a gymnast in the Olympics or any of the sports to be in a self-defense situation where through their gymnastics they had to take another human life to protect their own. Now, figure skating, we might make an exception for that. But what I'm saying is there's a difference between an Olympic sport and treating self-defense shooting as a sport. What I'm saying to you, Bob, is on its face, the notion that somehow teaching someone to shoot to defend their lives is an academic exercise the same as gymnastics is just messed up.
Yeah, that doesn't fit.
And what I'm saying is that, to me, it shows a complete genre, if you would, of, you know, this really isn't about running a gun in a life or death situation. This is about fantasy gun camp instead of fantasy band camp. You know, this is, I get to go play baseball with my heroes, or I get to go play pro-am golf. Well, my brand of operating a gun is not geared in that fantasy mode. So I guess that's part of how I look at this differently, and I would take exception. Now, there were some comments that were offered, and Rob actually offered some comments, and, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, if there was ever a case of someone drinking their own bathwater, you know, reading their own press releases and believing them, you know, is to congratulate oneself on one of your students, you know, sycophantic rants. And I'm sort of going, you know, he criticized everyone that had come before him and that he was the next generation self-appointed. And I'm thinking to myself, again, you know, let's don't be so critical of those that got us here because they did get us here.
Right, you know? Right. They brought you to the dance.
And my point is that people who are barely old enough to remember guns that came before the SIGs and the Glocks and the other things, you know, they had to do some things different because of what they had, because of the ammunition they had, because of, you know, the machining that was available. You know, it's like, we sell all these people down the road because you only have the filter of your own hubris to look through.
Mm-hmm.
And I take exception a little bit to that, not because I think, oh, I'm one of these old greats, but I'm like, gee, you know, you should walk a mile in their shoes before you, you know, rip them to shreds. And that's part of what I, you know, kind of think there is, well, guys, you know, you're not teaching the same thing I'm teaching. You're not doing the same thing I'm doing. And I guess, Bob, the final question that I think everyone should ask themselves, and I'm going to put the skunk on the table, and this is the skunk. You know, Bob, tell me, how valid is it to take classes that are geared with guns and self-defense from a guy who won't carry a gun? And I'm asking you this, you know, Bob, if I said, I need you to come to my super-duper shooting class, but, oh, by the way, I really don't carry a gun that much.
John, are there really instructors like that?
I think you should ask every instructor before you give them the money. But, yeah, I know some famous instructors that don't carry guns.
Really? Okay. I don't know how somebody can teach that which they do not know.
Well, I think it's a mindset thing, Bob. I think you and I are so aghast by it because we understand the grave consequences that are going on here. We also understand that we want our students to survive. But I frankly had enough of don't do as I do as I say, that I'm calling it out now. And I'm saying, you know, this is not how we need to be operating. You know, we need to have people that are our leaders by example, not just by their words.
No, exactly. Well, and at the risk of being repetitive, I'll go ahead and I'll say it again anyway. You know, another question, you know, you're telling us to ask the question, you know, are you carrying a gun? I think the next question that you need to ask the instructor is, what training classes have you taken this year?
Mm-hmm.
I think an instructor, a man, woman, I don't care who they are, whoever's out there teaching people to shoot, I think they need to at least go and take one class a year from somebody else. Does that sound reasonable?
You know, Bob, I think that to become the student at least once a year is a bare minimum.
I think
if you're not investing in letting someone else teach you, critique your shooting, putting your stuff in the place of your students, if you're not feeling that sting a little bit of the student versus the instructor, the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to tell you, I know instructors right now who run schools and say, yeah, you know, I do that. I audit that class. Oh, really? Well, do you stand up and shoot with the other? Oh, no. You know, I'm only here for the classroom portion and the teaching and instructor development, blah, blah, blah. No. Get your butt in line and shoot with everybody else.
Exactly.
Get on the line, do what everyone else has to do. And, you know, I recently had Tom Gibbons come in, And Tom taught a two-day class. And I'll tell you, I'm a graduate of Tom's instructor in advanced instructor development schools. And guess what I did the second day? I got my butt on the line and shot exactly what he called out, got yelled at by Tom for all the things that, you know, he wanted me to do that I didn't do and fix this and do this. And, you know, he really didn't give a crap what my preferred method was. He was teaching and I was to do what he taught. And you know what? I can do whatever I want to when he's not teaching his class, but he was there and it was at my place. And it did me good to be an instructor, to become the student. Well, sure. I think that's not too much to ask for.
No. No, I don't think it's too much to ask for either. Okay, well, I'm with you on that. You know, it's, I am shocked, and that's why I asked you the question, you know, are there really instructors out there, you don't have to name names, but are they really out there that don't carry a gun on a daily basis and don't shoot on at least a couple times a month?
You know, yeah, there are.
Wow. There are. All right. Well, I guess let's just say buyer beware.
I think that I would go more that the emperor has no clothes would
yeah.
be my better example of that. Now, you know, one last other thing, and I'm going to talk about something I do. You know, I hold a Masada Yub instructor development course.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having one in April this year, and I'll have it up on the website shortly. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, this class is not designed to teach you how to be an instructor, okay? This class is designed for those that are instructors to teach you how to shoot well enough to instruct people on certain levels so that you can demonstrate for them the proficiency that's necessary to do this. Now, to get you out of your comfort zone, you have to shoot it with a backup gun. You have to shoot it with a revolver. You have to shoot it with a service pistol.
Nice.
You know, you have to do these things. Well, hey, it's like, you know, 1,000 rounds of ammunition over 3 days. It's also heavily geared on why we do these things, how to deal with students, but it's not geared on adult education. It's geared on how do you get people to run the gun and how do you run the gun. And I tell you this because, you know, I've taken other instructor development courses. And like I said, I've taken Tom Givens, highly recommend his instructor development courses. But if his is heavily geared on if you can't shoot the qualification of that course, you don't pass. And I had people in my classes, both of them, that didn't pass. Now, I'm telling you this to say any instructor development course that doesn't have a shooting component that's pass-fail, that should be a real concern to everyone who's considering to be an instructor.
Oh, of course.
You know, I think of it this way. There's something wrong in my little small-headed, wrong-thinking mind, Bob, to say, you know, if I'm teaching people to survive a gunfight, every gunfight will have a winner and a loser, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, if my classes don't revolve around some of the lessons of winning and losing, perhaps I don't have realistic training.
But, John, you can't have winners and losers. Everybody has to be a winner because the losers might feel bad.
I understand, and I apologize that they will feel bad. However, I am telling you that sometimes the pressure of people watching you shoot well is its reward for the practice. And sometimes the punishment for watching people watch you shoot poorly motivates you to, I don't know, perhaps get training, get practice, shoot better?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, I've experienced that. You know, nobody is perfect. Everybody has bad days. I had a bad day once teaching a class, and it was not much fun. And so the very next day, I was out at the range correcting those mistakes.
Yes, yeah. And you know what, Bob? That's a lesson that'll stick with you because it leaves a mark. You paid for it, you know?
Of course, yeah. And that's one of the great things about being an instructor. For those of you listening to this that are fellow instructors, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about is, you know, it really does keep you sharp having to respond to the pressure to go out there and perform in front of your students.
And, you know, I think that in terms of changing gears a little bit on this subject is – you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about IDPA Nationals.
Yeah, yeah. Let's shift gears here and talk about that.
You know, I've had some thoughts as I reflect back on it, and if I can, allow me a few minutes of rant here, and I'll make the point.
Go ahead and rant.
Well, we went to IDPA Nationals. It was 17 stages, several hundred rounds, shot over 2 days. And the first day that I shot, shot in the afternoon, and shot in the afternoon. It rained. And when I say rained, I had my ammunition in a plastic little ammo can, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you know when you have to turn your ammo can over on a towel, pour the water out of it, and dry your ammunition off, you've gotten some rain.
Yeah, I would think so.
And so we shot in the rain, and then we shot in the heat, and, you know, then the weather turned nice for everybody else to shoot, which is my lot in life. I'm not complaining. But what I realized is this. You know, we go to the range to practice. And I have found that most people, when you're really working with them, and I'm talking about working as in a, you know, a condensed time frame, without some substantial time between volleys of fire or whatever. So if I'm working with someone in a private lesson, they have somewhere between 50 and 200 rounds of what I call well-aimed, placed shot ability. And then after that, mental and physical fatigue sets in, and you got to feed them. You got to give them a break. You got to throw in some classroom lecture. You got to do something before you come back at it because they've got to recharge. Well,
right.
My point being about the IDPA Nationals is, you know, there was nothing there that was, I could say, gee, you know, I've just never seen this before. That was ooh and ah. I can't say that my performance was hampered by some unjust call that affected my placement. What I can tell you is that it was a match that focused on endurance. It was a match that wasn't built around toys and games. It was a match that was built around, can you run your front sight and can you call your shots? Because you're not going to be able to see every one of them, and you're not going to be able to just make them up by throwing another round. You're actually going to have to be able to make your shots. And in doing so, it exposed to me, it said, you know, what that does is that really is what I call the normalizer that takes us to a baseline. Because, Bob, you and I both know we've had bad days, either at the range, at a match, as an instructor, in a class, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We've had
yep.
bad days.
That's right.
But you and I both know we've had the good days, you know, where it's like, I am in the freaking zone.
Oh, yeah.
Everything goes perfect. The gun runs beautiful. We're psyched up. You know, I mean, it's like we got our own cheering section. We're just running everything flawless.
Well, right.
To really understand what kind of shooter we are, we've got to normalize both of those good days and bad days to somewhere into what I call the consistency zone. And what I mean by that is the better the shooter, the more consistently good they are, and the less consistently bad they make mistakes. Well, the only way that we get a true baseline on how our performance is to shoot enough stages that we have some good ones, we have some bad ones, and we have some okay ones, and then we average those out. I think that gives us a true baseline of what our on-performance demand is.
Yeah, I think that's good, you know, because everybody can go out and shoot stages great once or twice, and they can go out and, you know, shoot them terribly. But if you go out and you have two good stages, you say, okay, that's how good of a shooter I am. Now, that's not realistic.
Well, Bob, I think here's the thing. I tell people this all the time. You know, there's a Tuesday night match I go to, and they'll set up between three and three and a half, four stages, you know. You go out there, you shoot 40 or 50 rounds, maybe 48 rounds, you know, if you don't miss. And you go out there, and you'll have people think, I'm king of the world. And, man, they look pretty good till they go to a major match. And guess what? They can't put it together for 10 stages. You know, they can't keep it going. And they have one crash, and they can never put the train back on the tracks. Well, my metaphor is, you know, if we're going to really see how well we're prepared to fight with that gun, we have to do some things that put us under pressure for a long period of time, because guess what? The only difference between me and Bob Vogel, besides, you know, 50 or 100 pounds and, you know, 20 years, is this. Bob is consistently good on every stage. I'm not. The only difference between me and insert whoever it is that maybe comes in way down the pack is I'm consistently better than them. And I think that's the purpose of an endurance competition match like the Nationals or like a lot of regional or state matches is, what it does is it takes the good and the bad and the medium and it blends us together and it lets us see what our true baseline performance is.
Yeah, I agree.
That, I think, is an important part of understanding where your training is working and where it is deficient.
Yeah, and I want to add something to that, John, because everybody listening to this who's a competition shooter and wants to aspire to be a better competition shooter, it seems to me like you need to make sure that you are participating in a pretty wide variety of matches and in several disciplines. Because, you know, I've shot the four-stage match before, and, you know, it's a lot easier to pick up your game over four stages, and then I've shot the 12-stage match, and those are much, much harder. So I think, you know, get out of your comfort zone, get out of your local club on Tuesday nights or Thursday nights or whenever that only run four or five stages, and go reach out into some bigger stuff too. Does that make sense?
You know, it absolutely does. I tell you, this year I've shot a couple of major matches. I shot the USPSA Single Stack Nationals in Barry, Illinois. You know, I shot the Arkansas State match, the Missouri State match. I shot IDPA Nationals. I shot the IDPA Single Stack match. You know, I kind of went around and tried to make sure. What I tell people is this: my match schedule that I keep, I'll be working on next year for what matches I'm going to shoot next year. Now, I'm holding the Nighthawk Custom Challenge match October 26th in Centerton, and I probably won't shoot my own match. And the reason is I'm match director, and I can't focus on building a match and shooting a match.
Right.
So I probably won't shoot my own match, but I'm going to be building the match schedule that I'm going to shoot, because what I want to do is I want to go to matches not to walk around all, you know, starry-eyed and go, ooh, I've never seen that mover and I've never seen this, because guess what? Every match involves what? Shooting what you're supposed to and not shooting what you're not supposed to, doing it fast and doing it accurately. That's every match in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to make sure of is that I'm shooting matches that are going to baseline for me that endurance over time. And that, I think, is really the function of the matches, is to say, is my training effective or is it not effective in what I'm doing?
Okay.
And you know, I know that people may disagree, and hey, if people do, you know, I always encourage reasonably cogent criticism of what I've said, because I'm not sure that I'm always right. But I'd love to hear if people think differently about the things that we talked about, Bob. I always encourage people to, you know, take me to task, and I'll answer them either on the forum or with you, or come back and do a podcast with you to answer any of the people that want to take exception to what I've said. And I think those would be topics that I'd welcome some debate on. Because, Bob, I think you and I were like-minded about a lot of things, but when we disagree about a few things, I mean, obviously you hate 1911s and love Glocks, and I, you know, hate Glocks and love 1911s. I mean, we've both been branded with that, and my answer to everything's get training. But, you know, sorry, tongue in cheek there. I do think that what we're doing with guns, we got to be honest about it. And I'm appealing to the people who I think have a sense of intellectual honesty and say, hey, you know, I'm training, I want to get better, I'm carrying a gun for this, I'm doing that. Now, look, if you've got an Anschutz 22 and you go out and you want to shoot pigs and chickens and sheep with steel and that's all you want to do and you case it and uncase it, hey, you're part of the movement, brother. I'm happy with that. I'm not criticizing you. I'm not pointing fingers at you. I'm not laughing at you. You know, if you want to go out and put on a set of assless chaps and shoot at steel men, you know, who are bent over and wear big hats, I'm cool with that, too. You're in the movement. I'm not criticizing.
Don't forget they have funny names, too.
you know, why did we not get to make up names when we shoot IDPA and USPSA and stuff? I mean, you know, we should. I mean,
yeah.
I've got a shooting name, and so I, you know, just wonder why we can't have that persona out there. I guess I don't know.
What's your shooting name, John?
Well, you know, it was given to me by some folks with the Masada U Group. It's a Big Sexy.
Oh, that's right. Yep. Yep. How could I forget that? Well, yeah, I wish that IDPA and USPSA would let us, you know, have all the crazy names like the Cowboy Action guys do. I mean, that'd be kind of cool.
I mean, they already let us dress like NASCAR drivers.
That's right, they do. Oh, isn't that something? You know, some of you go to these. For those of you who have been to a sanctioned competition match, you know what John and I are talking about. Some of these guys with all the sponsors, they do. They show up. They have these shooting shirts that look exactly like they're going to jump in their NASCAR pretty quick here.
Oh yeah, it's amazing. And you're just like, well, I appreciate that as much as the next guy, but you know, I'm not sure that, you know, hey, okay, I've done it. I'm guilty of it. I've got several jerseys in my closet, but at least I make fun of myself.
You know, I shot a match one time and the guy even had sponsor logos on his shoes.
Wow.
Yep.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's nice to have all those sponsors, I guess, but that is kind of funny. So if we could have our names and all that other stuff, you know, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah, you know. But what I was going with this, Bob, is, you know, I'm not trying to cast a smaller net of shooters. I'm not trying to cull the herd and push one group out. I'm not trying to, you know, offend the Glock crowd and only, you know, to the exclusion of only 19, 11 shooters. I'm not doing that. I'm not judging people. And, you know, I know that Steve Z probably, you know, is mad at me about something I've said, making fun of a group. And I apologize right now, Steve, for offending you.
No, come on now. Well, no, come on now. Steve's a great guy. And, you know, he took issue with the one thing that was said, you know, a month or two ago, something like that. But I got nothing but high respect for Rick and Steve, both of them from the Power Factor show. I had the pleasure of competing with them in a baking oven in Wichita Falls, Texas. It was so hot. Uh-huh. That's what it felt like. But it was great.
Well, Bob, you know what? You know this. If I don't like you, I don't poke fun at you. And I actually do think that those guys are funny, and whether they try to be or not. And, you know, I thought it was actually really funny, you know, that I managed to rile people up. But somehow, I don't know if it's my charming personality or my winning ways, sometimes I offend people. So, you know, that's where I was going.
Well, sometimes I do, too. You know, I'll tell a quick story. I'm not going to throw out names because I'm not that kind of a guy. But there's a major blogger out there that emailed me, or I think he Facebook messaged me not too long ago, and said that he quit listening to my show because I was complaining too much about IDPA rules. And so I know, you know, I had to refund the fee that he paid to listen to my podcast, and I did that. So I offend people from time to time too, but I don't know really how much time I have actually spent on this show complaining about IDPA rules. Matter of fact, I think some of the new rules that they put out, was it a couple months ago or something like that? I think some of them are pretty good.
Well, you know, Bob, I will share this funny little story with you. I was asked to speak to the local chapter of the Well-Armed Woman. And what they asked me to come and speak about was, the first topic they asked me to speak about was what's in your range bag, but I was actually booked that night. And so she said, I'll do that topic. She said, but could you come and talk to our group about competition shooting? And I said, sure, I'll be happy to do that. And so, you know, I worked on a little PowerPoint and was kind of going through and talked about USPSA and IDPA and Ruger Rimfire and cowboy action shooting and bullseye shooting and bowling pin shooting. And just all the shooting that you could really do kind of with a handgun out there, you know?
Right.
And my focus was to introduce them to it, talk about it. And then one of the points we got to was I had this big page up there and it said, why do I shoot competition? Well, I had actually posted that question on a forum, and I had a ton of answers, and there were answers like, occasionally I get to beat my kid, you know, at it. It's the camaraderie. It's the, you know, just a little bunch of reasons. And finally, my last reason that flashed up on there was, I said, and my wife told me to put this on there, was so I can gripe about the rules. And you know, I said, honestly, I said, sometimes I have to say, I don't make the rules. I don't have to agree to the rules. I just have to shoot right up to the rules. Well, you know, unfortunately, rules are necessary, and there are rules we like and rules we don't like, and griping about the rules doesn't mean that there is a more perfect sport that we should be shooting. It just means that there are rules we like and rules we don't like, but unfortunately, you know, I've yet to see anyone who got to pick the gunfight they got to be in. There will be rules in the gunfight you're in, and they will not be of your choosing. It will probably not be at the place and time of your choosing, and you will have to fight with those. So you might learn to work around things you don't like.
You know, John, that's a great point. Let me echo that again. I really like what you just said. You know, griping about rules or complaining about rules doesn't mean that we think that there's a better sport. And I think this one person in particular, and maybe some others, kind of took it as me saying that there's a better sport out there. I mean, I'll give you an example. You know, you and I are talking on a Monday. It's a Monday morning here.
Yeah.
Well, yesterday there were a lot of football games on Sunday, and I saw a lot of football players griping about the rules on the football field. You know, some of these guys just simply don't like the rules, but you know what? They're not quitting the game. They're not wanting to leave their team, or they're not wanting to go take up basketball or baseball because they think that the rules in football suck. So that's a good point.
And, you know, Bob, here's the last point. You know, they did not make up rules in football to make the game suck. That was not the purpose of the rules. And you know, the rules that we have in any sport are there because we wanted to make the game run smoother, or somebody did something and we said, hey, you know, we're not going to let that happen because that's not fair, or that's not in the spirit of the game,
right,
or that's unsafe. Like, for instance, you know, we used to let people, use their head to tackle the other person with leather helmets on, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we kind of found out that we turned a whole bunch of people into meatloaf head by doing that, didn't we?
Well, yeah, because with those hard helmets, yeah.
We got better safety equipment, and guess what? We say, don't use your head to do this with, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so, you know, we may not like that rule, but there's a reason that it was there. And maybe somebody ruined it for everybody. Well, I'll give you one. You know, I can tell you right now, there's a rule in IDPA that says all reloads start from the belt, all reloads end at the belt, and magazines must be stored below this. You know what happened? Lynn Baxley was doing the reloads, and he was at the stage. He would draw the gun, draw the magazine, shoot with the magazine in his weak hand pressed against the gun, and then do the reload up at the gun. Now, that got that rule in place. Okay, second thing. He was storing, some of his guys were actually storing the magazines on a tactical reload in their mouth.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm getting at is, did that rule need to be there? Well, it probably didn't need to be there until someone took everything to the extreme. But you can't always say, hey, dude, that violates the spirit. Well, no, it doesn't. My spirit says that's fine. Well, okay, now we're going to write down a rule and say you can't do this. Well, does that affect everybody? Sure it does. But that's how that rule got in there that people don't like.
Well, let me get your opinion on something. Okay, this business about, well, that violates the spirit of competition. Here's something I've always been confused about. If I'm not mistaken, the spirit of competition, the reason that these competition sports were developed, especially IDPA, were to teach shooters how to become better with their defensive carry gun. Am I right?
Well, Bob, you know, you've asked a really great question, and I'm going to answer it.
Okay.
USPSA was started out to be experimental and to find out what the best combat shooting techniques were, okay? IDPA spun off of that because they said it had gotten irrelevant to combat or self-defense shooting, and the concealed carry movement were really what was driving this to say, you know what, we want you to be able to go out, buy a $300, $400, $500 gun, come and shoot this sport. You don't have to have a gun with a scope on it and a comp to be competitive. Now, USPSA responded, came out with production class, single stack class. They introduced other classes where people could shoot. Well, guess what? The most popular class in USPSA is production. Okay? IDPA, the gun that drives everything, is still the polymer class of gun. I mean, that's where people are at. Mm-hmm. So, in a sense, yes, you're correct. But the problem is that little green-eyed monster of wanting to win, pride and hubris, drives us to say, well, rather than this, I'll go out and buy this gun that will help me to be, you know, X percent better than Bob and John, and so I'll buy my way up. And that is where that whole term of the spirit of the game.
Okay, I understand. I understand that, and I understand how it pertains to equipment. You know, they don't want it to become an equipment race. I understand that. But, you know, you brought up the issue of Len Baxley and the way he was doing reloads. I'd have to say that that's probably not something I would try, but if guys like Len can make it work and were able to make it work, I don't really see anything wrong with that. I mean, that's not really buying your way up. That's just inventing a new way to do something.
Well, let me give you the flip side of the coin, okay? In a self-defense shooting, Bob, you're going to tell me that
No.
you had your gun, and the first thing you would do is draw your gun and your extra magazine at the same time and hold them together to shoot would be your preferred technique. That would be how that would work in a self-defense situation. And I think most people would say, no, that's not really how the preferred technique would be to work, nor is that a realistic thing. Just like saying, hey, you know, you need to carry a holster and a gun that is concealable. I mean,
No.
you can put it underneath your coat. So I think that, you know, that piece of it, that rule specifically, wasn't thought about originally because people said, who the heck would do that? Or who the heck would store an extra magazine in their mouth?
No, and as I mentioned, John, as I mentioned earlier, those are not techniques I would do or advocate or teach. All right? But those techniques do not spark an equipment race, if that's what they're really worried about.
Well, what I think they're worried about is this. Once you realize that to be competitive, you must embrace that technique because
yeah.
it saves a second on the reload or 2 seconds on the reload.
Yeah, what they don't want people doing is they don't want people, everybody trying that to be able to save time. I get it.
Yeah, exactly.
I get it. Yeah. And so there. So again, back to what the spirit of competition sports are. The spirit of competition sports, obviously, is to learn to get better with your defensive handgun and not get too gamey.
Exactly.
Not be a gamester out there, but, you know, let's do this as we carry, because everybody, like you said, if they had to draw their gun to defend themselves, they're probably not going to draw the gun and a spare magazine at the same time. Pretty stupid thing to do.
I think that that's an acknowledged bad idea. Now, I will share with you, you know, there are some things that have turned into how many, you know, angels dance on the head of a pin questions, like, is this cover, is this acceptable, is this that? And we've driven ourselves through trying to make interpretations of things to where we've created things in the rules that may not be what we'd really do either that we force ourselves into.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think, you know, the rules force us to say, is it the best sport out there? Well, if you're really looking for something that you carry with your concealed handgun, yeah, probably is. There's probably not a better one.
Yeah.
Is it perfect? No, probably because they have me as a member. I can tell you they're not perfect, Bob. So I'm not being flippant. But what I do just want to kind of leave this off is one, because we have rules, it forces us to do things we may not want to do. That sounds a lot like what life really is in kind of a gunfight.
Exactly.
Two, I think it gives us a measure of how our training is working. And I think three, what it really does is it forces us to say, you know, if I'm going to get better, I'm going to have to examine what I'm doing, and I'm going to have to figure out how to change these things, which leads me to saying, you know, everybody wants to go up on stage and get the award. How many of us want to go put the work in to get it? And that's fundamentally the difference that I see between the people who get the awards or the people who are the great shooters in class, whether they're just getting acknowledged for their skill set, is are they putting in the work? And however you feel about competition, now I've got friends of mine who I think a lot of who really kind of crap on the idea of shooting competition. And I'm like, you know what, though? Dude's putting in the work. He's working. He's shooting. He's doing this. I'm not going to criticize him. I think he's dead wrong. But the guys who don't put in the work and bitch about competition sounds pretty hollow to me.
Just curious, why does he discourage competition shooting?
Didn't say he discouraged competition shooting. I said he just doesn't really shoot it much. One of the few guys I know, I mean, most of the people who discourage competition shooting aren't very good. That's been my experience. They aren't very good on the range, and they aren't very good. I mean, look, I'll tell you something. You show me somebody really, really, really good, I mean like world-class good, that doesn't shoot competition, I say, you know what? I'll listen to them if they can really deliver and do. But most of the people that discourage competition really aren't that good a shooter themselves. They really don't like getting beat, so they think everybody shouldn't do it. They have a variety of montage of reasons. Oh, this rule, that rule, this will get you killed, that'll do this, that'll do that. You know, I've asked very learned people, and I've said, can you show me one example, just one? And I'm asking your listeners to bust me out on this if they got it. Show me one example where someone who is an avid competition shooter did something in a real live gunfight because they shot competition that got them killed.
Amen.
Show me one.
Yeah. You know what? I 100% agree with you. You know, Ben Branham and I talked about this on a podcast. Must have been probably 6 to 8 months ago or something like that. And we're both still looking for that one example that somebody can point to that shows where something in competition got them killed. Great point. And everybody knows my voicemail number, and they have my email address, and they know how to get on the forums and things like that. So, and they know how to find me on Facebook. If you can find that example, please send it on over.
Well, Bob, thanks for having me on today, and look forward to hearing from your listeners.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Many thanks, John. I appreciate your time. Folks, keep in mind, these people who interview, they donate their time to this show. So visit their websites, check out their classes, those of them that market product and things like that, check them out. Speaking of product, let's take care of the people who take care of this show and who help bring you this show. Some people that some have officially sponsored, some have unofficially sponsored. American Gun Oil is the only gun oil that I use now, and he has decided to sponsor the show and also give listeners a special price on his product. All right, sorry there. I had to take care of a customer that takes care of me. Anyway, American Gun Oil is offering special prices to Handgun World podcast listeners and a special page, and I will link to that special page if you want to order excellent gun oil. It's the only stuff that I use now. So many thanks to Michael over at American Gun Oil. The next thing I want to talk about is a couple of product manufacturers who have helped out Shooters Club members. On Your Six Designs, they make really nice Kydex holsters. Excellent for appendix carry. Check them out. On Your Six Designs, if you are a member of the Shooters Club, you have been emailed a coupon code to get a nice discount from On Your Six Designs. Same with Sturdy Belt. Man, I really like Sturdy Belt. I tell you what, I'm wearing my Sturdy Belt today, and these are excellent, very well-made belts. David's company does a great job. Sturdybelt.com. That's Sturdybelt.com. I'm a user of all of these products, by the way. I don't endorse anything that I don't use and haven't used and put to the test. And David has also given discounts to Shooters Club members. So that's really cool. And the folks over at Texas Law Shield, who interviewed a few weeks back with me, that's another excellent program. If you carry a gun, you need something like Texas Law Shield. They are offering 2 months free if you purchase an annual membership to all Handgun World podcast listeners. The coupon code is Handgun World. Okay, so put in the coupon code Handgun World whenever you order your membership, your annual membership for Texas Law Shield. Put in Handgun World and you'll get 2 months free. If you have any issues with that, just let me know. So those companies right there have been doing a really good job. And of course, even though he doesn't officially sponsor the show, Jason Christensen at Concealment Solutions, I probably wear the Black Mamba more than any holster that I have. It's just simply that good and very, very well designed. Although, I'll tell you what, recently I was sent some other holsters. I got a whole box full of holsters, which is good. Nothing wrong with a box full of holsters. Polite Society holsters. Google them. Polite Society holsters. I'll put that in the show notes as well. Pretty good. I'm testing their stuff. I don't really comment and do reviews until I've had a chance to use them. The last thing I want to mention is, you heard last week when I was with Brad at the shooting range, this TSD Combat Systems barrel. Wow, for my G19, I got a threaded barrel from TSD Combat Systems over at One Source Tactical, a Suarez International company. And many thanks, Tom, at One Source Tactical. He sent this barrel. I have about another 200 or 300 rounds I want to run through this barrel. And then I got some things I really want to say about it. But my initial impressions on this match-grade barrel, first of all, I like the fully supported chamber. It's tight, man. When I drop it into my Glock 19, it is tight. It is really tight. There's very little. There's not nearly as much play in as there is compared to a standard Glock barrel. So I really like that. The lockup seems to be a lot tighter, and having that tighter lockup is going to increase some accuracy. I'll tell you about another product. I don't know if those of you who shoot Glocks know much about these, but TR Graham match grade barrel locks. Now, what that is the takedown lever, and I think that that Glock calls that the slide stop. That's what they call the slide stop or the slide lock. Anyway, it's the same as the takedown lever. The barrel hood, that's a part where the barrel locks up also. And the TR Graham has a narrower notch than the Glock. I keep calling it a slide lock, okay? It has a narrower notch in their slide lock or barrel lock than the standard Glock does. And with that barrel hood locking up like that, that locking lug on the bottom of the barrel locking up into that tighter notch, it also reduces the amount of play and causes a better lockup. So between that and the match-grade barrel by TSD Combat Systems, it's a heck of a combination. And I'm definitely getting more accuracy. Brad witnessed it at the range a couple weeks ago. We didn't really get any really good video on that. So I'm going to try next time I get to the range, I'm going to shoot a good video on comparing the accuracy of the two. A standard Glock barrel and the factory barrel lock or slide lock that comes with it. And the match grade barrel TSD Combat Systems made, combined with the TR Graham match grade slide lock. Now, one thing that's, you know, TR Graham is out of Fort Worth, Texas. Used to be in Houston. And if I like this, I'm gonna talk to Mr. Graham and see how I can maybe get a good supply of these and then make them available to you guys. Or maybe I can work something out with him where he can make them available to you guys, because it's definitely worth it. It's worth it, and it's so far, I'm enjoying some very good results. I mean, you can just feel it, first of all. All you got to do is drop in the match-grade barrel. And actually, you could use the match-grade slide lock with your stock barrel. And you'll notice you'll have less play in that barrel when it locks up. So the combination of the two is awesome. And I've seen no reliability concerns whatsoever with the TSD Combat Systems barrel. So again, I'll be talking more about that. If you want to check it out, go to onesourcetactical.com. Take a look at some of the enhanced capability Glocks that they have over there. I really want the enhanced capability, the ECP-26, which is a reworked Glock 26. Woo! Good stuff, man. I'm saving up for one of those. Check that out over at onesourcetactical.com. All right, folks, thanks very much. You know, I'd like to mention this, that the average response time for 911 is 23 minutes. The average response time of my double tap 9mm loads is about 1,450 feet per second. So I'll take the 1,450 feet per second versus 23 minutes from 911 anytime. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you in a couple weeks. Goodbye.